arts at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. I'm going to jump right into a song. Last week, I mentioned during the interview that I was going to play this song for you, a song about pie, and we didn't get a chance to play it. We ran out of time. So I'm going to jump right on and play. This is Lucy Kaplansky, and this is a song about pie, because Pie Day is coming up the 14th of March, and so that'll be before next week's show. So I want to make sure you all get it on your calendar, and we'll just play a little bit of this, a song about pie.
Through all the bygone ages, philosophers and sages have meditated on the circle's mysteries. From Euclid to Pythagoras, from Gauss to Anaxagoras, their thoughts have filled the library's bulging history. And yet there was elation throughout the whole Greek nation when Archimedes did his mighty computation. He said, 3-1-4-1, oh my, here's a song we'll sing about pi. Not a sigma or mu, but a well-known Greek letter too. You can have your alphas and your great phi beta's and omegas for a friend. But that's just what a circle doesn't have a beginning or an end. 3-1-4-1-5-9 is a ratio we don't define. 2 pi times radii gives circumference you can rely. If you square the radius times the pi, you will get the circle space. Here's my song about pi, fit for mathematicians' embrace.
Folks, that is Lucy Kaplansky, a song about pie. She was here last week for the 411 concert series, and it was really a pleasure to hear her sing and play. And I thought that was quite, you know, something about pie. You don't always get to hear a song about pie. And I think it's I like when they combine things that are unexpected, and that certainly does that for me. There aren't a lot of songs about pie. And for a while, I thought there weren't a lot of songs about or poems about math. And then last night at my son and my daughter's school, they had a big event called True Colors, a celebration of the arts, and there was a poetry cafe, and there was a book about math poems. And I thought, wow, this is a great world. So it's pretty exciting for me. If you're interested in the 411 concert series, Tom Brousseau is coming up, and that is on April 21st at the Guild Theater. So make note of that and check out the website at northfieldartsguild.org, and you can learn all about that upcoming concert. So at that night, at that event last night, there was this giant, they were painting a mural, and so they had three tables that were filled with a piece of paper, and the kids were putting together a mural, and the teachers were letting them do whatever they wanted. And of course my son ran right in there, went for the black, and drew a giant mustache on some, I forget, critter that was there. And I said, oh no, you should ask, what are the guidelines? And he turned to me and said, there are no guidelines. This is art. Oops. Okay, that's the mom in me. I shouldn't do that. You're right. It's totally the way it's supposed to be. So I just love that spirit, and we absolutely need this in our world. And the kids also did these beautiful poems. They're having a poetry residency in honor of upcoming poetry month, which is in April, so that we'll be celebrating here. And they made these little fold-up books that are just gorgeous. So much inspiration. It's out there everywhere you look. And so I hope that you'll, in this week, write a song about pie, paint what your heart desires, let the clay guide you to something, and play your instrument and toot your horn, because that's something that we want to celebrate. So today on the show, we are going to welcome Paul Nemisto. He is the conductor of the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra. Welcome to Art Signing Radio.
Hey, pie. I was imagining it was something that you put into the microwave oven for 30 seconds to put a big slab of aged cheddar cheese on top of it. I was totally wrong.
Are you cheese and ice cream or just cheese?
One or the other.
One or the other. Never indulge in both. A little over. Well, you could serve pie on Pie Day and make it a two-pie day.
You could do that.
Yeah, I think that's a fun thing to do. And also I'm welcoming flute soloist Celia. And I forgot to ask, is it Wook?
Wook.
Okay. It looked just like book then. Yeah. Welcome to Art Zany Radio. You are going to be a part of the concert coming up, which is the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra Youth Soloist Concert. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
It's very exciting. This is this is very different because this is a CVRO concert that is just one performance.
Right.
So you need to get that on your calendar. It's this weekend, Sunday, March 11th at 3 p.m. at St. John's Hall, which is a part of the church right here in Northfield, 500 3rd Street West.
Right.
So, folks, it's in town. A great way to spend an afternoon. And we'll talk a lot more about the concert. But I want to have each of you introduce yourselves. I think, Paul, you haven't been here since you were in Finland, I don't think.
I'm trying to think. It must have been, I suppose, something about the Nutcracker the last time we talked.
But maybe we didn't visit about your Finland trip.
Oh, my goodness. That's so off the subject. But it was a great time. I was there for about 6 months and was helping them celebrate their centennial and had a great time digging around in the archives looking for old music.
And old instruments?
Well, that's been done to some extent, but I wasn't actually looking for instruments. I think I've found them all already over the years.
Wonder what is an archivist of or archaeologist of instruments called? Is there a name?
Organologist.
Oh.
See, organ is the Latin word for instrument or functional device. So an organologist doesn't just study organs, it studies all of the instruments.
A great word, that word of the day.
Could be for, if you want it to be.
It might be. Try and use that in a sentence. That would be fun. And Celia, tell us a little bit about yourself, and I'd also especially love to hear about your flute choir. I think that's an interesting group that I don't often hear.
Okay. So I'm a junior at Kenyon-Wanamingo High School. I am a co-first flute in the Kenyon-Wanamingo High School band. I played in the flute choir of the Southwest or Midwest Flute Association. That was a couple weeks ago. We met in one afternoon. We got our music beforehand. We all practiced. We came together, and it was probably one of the best flute experiences I've had. Everyone was so talented. We had all the flutes from piccolo to the contrabass, which is like 6 feet tall. It's huge and it sounds really good. And
Yeah. A 6 foot tall flute?
Yeah, it has to have a stand to hold it and like.
Do you hold, like, no, I can't do this on air because people won't see me, but I don't remember which side you play the flute on.
No, it has a stand on the floor.
Yeah.
It's a vertical instrument.
Yep.
Oh, it's not a horizontal instrument. I was thinking 6 feet. How do you get on stage?
It wouldn't work very well.
Watch out if you swing. That is exciting. So, and when you do a flute choir, is there any other instruments or is it strictly a flute ensemble?
Yeah, it was strictly flutes. So, but with all the different, from the alto flute, bass flute, and contrabass, we had all the sound to make it feel like it was so much richer than just one single normal flute would be, or even just a choir of five just flutes.
what a fun idea to, you know, be able to gather with other people who love the instrument you love and learn about some different kinds. Do you play other flutes or just the, I don't know what they call the standard flute. Is it B-flat? No, I'm trying to remember.
C flute.
Yeah. Okay.
It's called a transverse flute. It means it goes crossways. Horizontal.
Yeah, all kinds of things we're learning today. That's why I love having you here, because I always pick up something. And especially, and also with these concert notes, I'm telling you folks, if you're planning to go to the concert, do make sure that you get there early enough to read the program, because there's a lot of great detail that we won't get to all of it today that just teaches you a little bit about history and musical connections, the story behind the piece and the composers. And it's a fascinating read. I enjoy that. And how did this development of having a youth soloist concert, this is, to my mind, it's the first of the kind for the CVRL?
It's the first of its kind that was intentionally for inviting young musicians from the region to audition to become a soloist. Our attitude about this was, of course, the first one of our top tenets or in our mission statement is to try to reach many different audiences. So our programming tries to do that through ethnic orientation, through age group, through regions. So we try to play in different places, and one of them was we felt as though we hadn't really hit the youth. At least the teenage youth, in a way we have some others. We've had children's concerts. For instance, the Nutcracker was kind of for everybody. And we've had concerts that are for children, and we've had narrations for children with orchestral music for children. But this is one where we're trying to get the high schoolers somehow involved. And we were intentional about trying to make sure that we reach the public school sector. Because there are there's a possibility to have young talented musicians that reside or study here in the region who are not local, who didn't go through the public schools, aren't the product of local teachers and so forth, and we wanted to make sure that we did that. And so we put the word out, and after everything was done, we condensed it down to three young musicians who stood out, and so we invited them to come, and we've been preparing the background accompaniment for them now in the last several weeks, and we're ready to go.
And Celia, was this an audition process, or how did you find out about the program?
So my flute instructor, Jill Marr, originally told me about it, and I decided to audition. So I submitted a 2 to 3 minute audio recording of the first movement of the piece I'm playing, and then after that it went to a live audition portion, and after that all that was with the three of us who are performing in the concert, and so now I'm practicing with the orchestra.
That's got to feel good. Is it something that you've done? And I think you did perform before with an orchestra, yes?
No, I haven't.
Oh, there was another one of the students that had performed with an orchestra previous. So
there's a learning curve involved in that, of course.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, especially when you're the soloist, and so you're leading. You're working in tandem, but there is a certain amount of they need to hear you, and you need to hear them.
Well, you got that right. The soloist does lead in a way. We react as an orchestra to what she does or he does.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so have you had rehearsals together?
Yes.
Okay. And there are three students, I should mention, not able to join us today. So we're sending out a big shout out to Katie Von Epps from Kenyon and Brianne Ulrich.
I think it's Ulrich.
That was my question. Yeah, from Owatonna, who are also playing. Katie plays the flute as well, and Brianne plays the piano. So some different instruments. And I believe you and Katie are playing together.
That's not planned. Maybe they have a surprise for me.
Oh, no. Was I reading in the program something?
Katie and I...
The same song.
Katie and I play duets together. Like,
oh, that's where. Yeah. Okay.
She's my co-first chair in band at Kenyon.
So you do know each other then. How fun was that to just find out that you were both going to be a part of this experience?
It was super fun. Like, Katie and I are friends, and she's awesome. She's like probably like the nicest person I know. So it was really fun.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah, and how did you select the music, Paul, for this?
This was chosen, I suppose, by the teachers. And they each soloist offered a piece.
Okay.
For my approval, because I had to make sure we can get the orchestral background, you know. So once I found out what they were planning to do, I gave them the nod and said, yes, we can come up with an accompaniment for that, and that's how it was chosen.
Yeah, and this is the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra Youth Soloist Concert this Sunday, March 11th at St. John's Hall at 500 3rd Street in Northfield. And we should take a look at the music. Which is the piece that you are playing on, Celia?
I'm playing Era L'Italienne from Telemann's Suite in A Minor.
Okay, and is that something that, how did you connect with that, and what brought that to your attention?
My flute teacher brought it up, and she showed me the book, like this little book of pieces, and she was like, you can do this one or this one, and the Era L'Italienne just, it was very pretty, and I really liked the slow movement at the beginning, and then the fast movement is just really fun and, like, upbeat at the end, so I really like it.
Both Katie and Celia are playing pieces that are part of the standard educational repertoire for developing flutists. There's because of that, we get to hear them quite often, and they're well known to people that listen to classical music. These are not unknown pieces.
Well, maybe. So, yeah, I wasn't familiar with some of these. Yeah. I didn't play flute, so that was something that I was learning about. So do you want to introduce the piece? Should I play it first?
Are you going to do the
Telemann?
Yeah. Well, it's a slow opening section, and then it changes to kind of like a double time. Like it goes, it just changes the style. And I don't know how far you're going to get into the piece, but let's see.
Should we just start from the beginning?
Sure.
Okay, we'll go ahead and get that going. This is a piece that is, I'm trying to see the performers. Ricardo Martinez de Fresno, conductor and leader of the Badalona Conservative String Orchestra. This is a YouTube clip, so let's take a listen. And I might leave the mic on, or pop the mic if you want, Paul, so that we can hear something that you want to say. But we'll start just listening.
This is the standard Baroque orchestra as such. It's four string parts, first and second violin, viola, cello, and then a bass, string bass, along with a harpsichord. And that's the sort of the standard bread and butter Baroque orchestra upon which they will sometimes build other color instruments like a soloist such as this. Now this is originally for recorder, or what the Germans call Blockflöte. It's an instrument that is quite familiar among Americans because so many kids have played them in school. But it's a real authentic Baroque instrument, and it doesn't have any keys on it. It's just holes.
I may jump in here, too. So were you able to... do you have a harpsichord for the performance, or are you...
Well, we have an instrument that is going to suffice, and you won't know the difference unless you come up and look and see that it's plugged into the wall.
That is. And as you're listening to this, Celia, are you thinking about your playing? Are you imagining your performance? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, I'm just imagining playing it and, like, kind of sitting here, like, imagining how I play it and, like, how I move, and I'm doing my little flute dance.
Is that different that you'll be standing in front, or are you going to be, I suppose you could be seated if you wanted to.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to be standing, yeah.
Standing, facing the audience.
Okay.
Yeah, that's normal. That's usually how I'd perform something like this. Yeah. So, yeah, I've practiced this standing the entire time I've practiced it, so it would be weird if I was sitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just thinking, when you do an orchestra, you're normally in the seated position, and that must change something about your breaths, or it obviously allows you to have a little more freedom of movement than you would, and which maybe enhances your connection to the piece, I would think.
Yes, if you're just sitting still while you're playing, which I have to do during the fast part, or it does not go well. But if when you move, you really get into the music a lot more, and you perform it rather than just hit every note.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an important part.
Interesting about you asking about standing and sitting in performance. The ensemble that's actually performing this as we listen is a Spanish orchestra, and they do actually play standing up. So all of the string players are standing.
You're right.
And it's a little bit unusual. I mean, I think it's probably an effort to try to relive how it might have been back in the 1700s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are we going to switch to the faster part, or should we?
We've gone back to the slow again. Mm-hmm. So you can discontinue anytime you want to. We're just about done here.
Okay, that's just a little sample.
Yes.
Sometimes we like to learn and talk above the music, so you can always look that up yourself. That is the Telemann Suite A in A minor, air and Italian. I'm not sure.
Italian song, basically.
Ah, okay. And Laura Pou is the flautist playing that. Is it proper to say flautist or flutist, or?
That's very controversial.
Oh, I thought so.
It really doesn't matter.
Yeah. Do you have a preference?
I've always said flautist.
Okay.
So. I don't comment.
Wait a minute.
No comment. I don't care.
Well, I suppose. Yeah. You get to name.
I have no real good reason to say one or the other.
Okay. So, yeah. Well, that's true. Right. And so that's it's a beautiful piece. I mean, I can see how, and folks should listen to or come to the concert to hear the other movement. That tell me about your flute playing experience. When did you know that that was like the instrument you were really gravitated towards?
So. At Kenyon, we start band in fifth grade, but in fourth grade, we pick our instruments. And I always knew I wanted to play the flute, but I got put on clarinet.
Oh.
So I started the first 2 months of fifth grade and the summer before playing clarinet. And I remember sitting in band as a fifth grader, and I'd hear the flutes play something when they played by themselves, and I'd, like, cry because it was so beautiful, and I loved it so much, and I was sitting on the other side of the room playing the clarinet. So I decided that I was going to switch to flute 2 months late, and because I missed the early lessons, so I had to sort of, like, I had the book, and I kind of taught myself, like, how to make the sound on it. It took me a week. It was awful. But I kind of taught myself how to do that, and then I've played it in band since then, and now I'm a junior. So,
is there anyone in your family that's played the flute, or what do you think? How did you know that that was the sound of your, that resonated with you?
I don't know. I think I just heard videos on YouTube of the flute, and I just really loved the sound because the clarinet was just squeaky.
It does start out that way. That's the instrument I played when I was a kid, and I do sort of, I think I've mentioned this before, my poor parents, I think I played a C, and to learn my embouchure, like that one note, mm-hmm. for like a couple weeks at a time, just that note for over and over and over. So
A symphony orchestra conductor remains totally neutral on the question of which are preferred instruments.
You're right, absolutely. You have no preferences.
I will declare nothing.
Exactly, right. And this is, that's just one of the pieces. There's several other pieces, two of which are featuring the soloists, and then one that the orchestra will play as a piece with just
You mean the Dvorak,
yes? Yes, yes.
But then there also is a little overture, music taken from the motion picture Beauty and the Beast.
We're doing it as an overture. Correct. Mm. Yes. Is that opening the concert?
That's opening the concert.
Yes. And we don't have a clip of that, so you'll have to go.
I think that it's pretty well known, at least among anyone that goes to movies.
Right. Well, or even, yes.
Anyone who's got somebody in the family under the age of 20, they're going to have seen this movie.
And which one would you like to play next? What should we take a listen to?
Oh, I don't know. Why don't we try some of the Dvorak, and I think it's a 45-minute work, so you're going to have to decide what you want to do. We can just start at the beginning, I think, and do it.
Oh, and there is I'm going to go ahead and zoom ahead because there is this little pause. I remember when I was listening to it, so we'll go ahead and we're jumping right in.
Could be that the YouTube has its own independent sound control.
So maybe we'll try and move ahead in the piece and see if that helps us. Well, it's coming in, but we'll just randomly scan to 4:03 in and see where we are. We still have a pretty quiet sound.
Written when Dvorak was in residence in the United States, he actually did a little bit of field work and got to hear American folk songs and other original sources, and built this. He calls it From the New World, so it's based on his impression of American musical material, and it's extremely famous symphony, one of the most popular.
Yeah, I remember that he had toured through Iowa and Minnesota because of the population, the Bohemian population here.
Bohemian Czechs, yeah.
Right.
Like New Prague and Lonsdale and Vitali and...
And that was back...
Vitali, I should say.
At
the end of the 1800s.
Right, 1892, yeah. I think I remember reading, which is just kind of extraordinary if you think about what that must have been, the... way to travel and to make that incredible trip.
I suppose it would have been by carriage in some cases and by train in others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it would have been extraordinary to see and to meet the people, and for everybody, I'm sure everyone in town when he was there came.
Yeah, I haven't really read about what he did when he was in Minneapolis, but he must have had some contact. At that point, the Minneapolis Symphony, as it would have then been called, would have perhaps been formed by then, but I don't know that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been too early.
And I thought it was interesting, too, in the notes talking about all of the connections these composers had in, it makes you wonder if it's because they were living and influenced by each other that they all rose to such greatness, or just they were just great. It was one of those extraordinary moments in history.
Right. It's hard to know. I think that the fact that they did imitate each other, I'm talking about the Baroque guys now, yeah.
Yes.
Is a known thing. And it also is, maybe there was just that point in the evolution of the art that they were all able to apply themselves in that way and make such great progress.
Mm-hmm.
There are examples of that in other parts of history, like nuclear scientists in the 1940s or something like that. You know, there's a place where people just come together and they follow something and push it forward.
So. The writers in Paris, all that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
It's a it's an extraordinary thing. And this piece is, you mentioned Dvorak. It has this great popularity, especially I think in the States.
Worldwide.
Worldwide. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And so we're listening to a little clip of that piece. The
it's the opening movement of the. Of the his American Symphony, yeah.
Okay.
Dvorak's Ninth. Yeah.
Fun, something to look forward to for a Sunday afternoon, and that's on Sunday, March 11th at 3, that the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra will be performing. I think we're going to cruise down on that. I guess I forgot to mention the that's a Vienna Philharmonic who's performing that. So.
Herbert von Karajan.
I'm glad that you said that, and I didn't.
He was one of the first great recording conductors. He did huge number of recordings that came out on Deutsche Grammophon back in the, from about the 1950s to the 1980s.
And I think what's kind of extraordinary is if you are looking at it on YouTube, you see the instruments, you see the conductor, you see that performance, and you know it's not quite live, but it's engaging in a different way than just having CD. It gives you another element.
Sort of like that public broadcasting sort of experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting to look at that video too on YouTube because. It is the Vienna Philharmonic of the 1980s or 1970s. And the Vienna Philharmonic has some of its own instruments. In other words, it has its own tradition with regard to oboes, French horns, and some instruments that have evolved in Austria from the 1800s. And there are some orchestras that only use that particular style of instruments. And the Vienna is one of them.
Mm.
Yeah. Actually, it's called a Vienna horn. It's a special design, and it has a special sound.
I think that's extraordinary that there is, and that says something about the place that they're in, and you know the interest in that, and that people are given that permission to kind of explore and learn. And
pride, tradition, and a very stodgy, hard to change. That's the way they are.
Right. Yeah. We should move on to another piece. We have some more listening to do. I wonder if we should look at the one that Katie is going to be performing,
sure.
And because we have a flute expert here that can help us out with that. That is the Bach, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, let me pull that up and you can go ahead and introduce a little bit of that to us.
Yeah, there's lots of issues about what the title of this piece is and how they were titling pieces in general in the 1700s. It's sometimes called an overture. Well, it's not an overture. We think of an overture now as a single movement work. This is a multi-movement work. It's a suite. In other words, it's a set of Baroque style dances. Although both, and so is the one that Celia is playing from. They're stylized to some extent because the traditional old Baroque suite has got various set dances: passepied, rondo, minuet, gavotte, and so forth. And here they're pitching some more ethnic diversity into the suite, like the Italian song, and in the case of Bach, he's using it's a Polonaise, which is a Polish piece that he's borrowed that particular dance rhythm and made a piece out of it, and then the last movement of that is Badinari, which is a French dance, and those are the two movements from his overture. As he calls it.
I see that this is just a minute 22, so maybe we'll play the whole thing.
Well, I'm not sure what you got there.
Okay.
Let's find out.
Let's hit play and find out what we have.
While it's beautiful and it's Bach and it's similar, it's not actually the movement that she's doing. So it might be that you've got the whole suite there. I wouldn't worry about it too much because it gives you a taste of the style. There's the Badinari. The biggest difference between this piece and the Telemann is that Bach gives the flute much more of its head. The orchestra doesn't contribute as much sound. They're more in the background. In this instance, this performer is adding a lot of improvisatory notes that Bach didn't write. And that says something about Baroque music at the time, which was that it was a platform for individual expression. And that soloists could easily add a lot of notes if they wanted to show their virtuosity.
I never knew that before. We should give credit to Emmanuel Pahoud. I'm not sure how you say that.
I can't help you.
Okay, that he is with the Berliner Baroque Solisten?
Solists, yeah. It's just an orchestra.
Okay, yeah that was
it's
fun.
A small Baroque orchestra.
And Celia, have you and Katie been playing for each other and helping each other, or are you primarily working with your teachers?
A little bit, but we've mostly been working with Jill. Like she plays that. She has the entire thing memorized because she's fantastic, and so she'll just come into band and she'll be sitting there and she'll just whip up her flute and play the entire thing like perfectly, and it's incredible.
Are you talking about Katie, or are you talking about Jill?
Katie.
Okay.
Katie.
Jill could probably do that too. Yeah. and I think that's pretty incredible to have each other, to be able to, you know, support each other and to, you know, take this on together. I can't imagine that. What a great thing to have. And then we also have, as we mentioned, the piano soloist as well. And there's a piece from Chopin. Okay. I never quite remember.
That, by the way, is not his real name. He was Polish, and when he went to Paris as a young man, he changed it so that it was more easily digested by the Paris audiences. So.
Is that so? Yeah. That's interesting. I never knew that fact. Do you know his original?
Frantisek something or other. I don't remember.
Something difficult to say. Well, so let's maybe pop some of that in. It's a music show today. We've got lots of things happening. Again, this is another YouTube clip that Paul selected for us. This is the Piano Concerto No. 2.
Make sure you've got the second movement. I think you do.
It looks like it says the number 2, the third Allegro vivace.
Oh, that's fine.
Is that okay?
That's fine. Yeah, that's
all
fine.
Right. We'll go ahead and just turn that on, and anytime you want to jump in, go ahead.
Again, there's reference to an ethnic roots. This is based on the Polish dance, the mazurka. Kind of a slower 3-4 dance that's a little bit like a waltz. This performer is Arthur Rubinstein, my absolute favorite pianist. And I'm just old enough that I heard him live when he was on a tour in the United States back in the late 60s. Remarkable, remarkable performer. And this mazurka is in the form of a theme and variations. So he plays it, it's probably a 32-bar tune, and then he'll play it again in a different style and with a different speed and a different nuance, and he does that several times, and that's how the piece is put together.
Now, was that what Chopin intended?
Well, that's what he wrote.
Oh, okay, because I was just thinking about the last artist who did a little improv with his...
No, this is all written. Everything here is on the paper. It sounds like it's improvised. And maybe it was originally. It could very well be, and then he wrote it down afterward. Brianne is an exceptional performer. She's totally convincing. She has intentions to do another performance of it later in the spring with the Owatonna Community Orchestra. So I'm going to get to hear twice those that want to find her. Bassoon solo. Lovely.
I could listen for a long time, but we should probably bring in back our guest to this. This, again, was with the London Symphony Orchestra. That's from 1975.
Andre Previn conducting.
Yeah, pretty incredible. And I was wondering, Celia, do you ever use any videos or CDs of performances of pieces that you're learning or to help in your practice?
Yeah, the video you played today of the Telemann, I've been listening to a lot to get the orchestra and the flute solo actually together. And there's one other of a younger flute student that I've been listening to also, because that one is much more similar to how I play it. So,
and what is the difference, or what are you noticing that about the way you play it compared to those two performers?
The video you played has a lot more improvisation and just these little flourishes that make it sound very, very beautiful. But I don't put those in. I'm going more off what is written.
I could see how that'd be the way that I would play too. And anytime I did any of that, that was how I liked to do it as well. And because I think that's kind of fascinating to think about that these young music students have exposure to learning about lots more performances, seeing them on screen, hearing them in ways that maybe, what weren't possible years ago when students were learning and they would just be with their teacher.
Now, when I was a student, we had access to some of this, and we did look for them, and we did look for those recordings, and some of the repertoire, solo repertoire, nobody had done it, so we didn't have any recordings. We had to go do live performances or whatever. But now there's just so many resources. There's so many wonderful ways to get these sounds, and it's a bittersweet thing. It's a good thing because students can find models, and sometimes the models are beyond their reach, and so they get more frustrated than anything else to say, "Well, I can't do that." But at the same time, it's a quick learning experience, and on the bad side of that is it becomes one where you don't use your eyes to study the notes and study what's there and think about what's there to come up with your own original way of playing it. Mm. You depend on somebody else's wisdom and then just imitate it. And that's not all good. I think that there's room for somebody to approach a piece of music for the first time, never seen it before, and make their own judgment of what these notes mean. And that's important.
Yeah, that takes a while to develop that skill and to be able to play with that with confidence.
Yeah, that question mark about how do I do this for myself should always be there.
That's good advice. And I'm wondering if there's anything else we're missing about the concert. Want to make sure we get to all those details. The tickets are available online, if I recall.
I believe so, and they'll also be available at the door. And we've got a pretty good capacity at St. John's Hall, so I think that someone could make a spontaneous decision to just come.
Right, and the tickets are $12 for adults, $8 for seniors and students. It's all of the youth soloists, the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra. It is at Sunday, March 11th at 3 p.m. at St. John's Hall, as you mentioned.
Ample parking.
Yeah, that right, easy parking. That always makes a difference. And have you been to the space yet to see how that feels?
What day is today, Friday?
It is Friday.
Yeah, we were there last night.
Yeah.
That's an important part. How did that affect what you were thinking about the piece? And it's just another element of the performance that you need to feel comfortable with.
I just showed up and tried to do my job. And being the space we were practicing before was very similar to where we practiced at St. John's, so it wasn't that different, I don't think, but yeah.
It's going to be easier for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good space to hear. I like the space. I like to go back there. It's size-wise and flexibility-wise, it's very good for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was thinking as we were talking earlier, I meant to ask this question. Do you have a favorite, like a flautist that you admire or enjoy the works that they do that you look up to?
I've heard Catherine Ramirez perform. I don't know if she still is, but she was the artist in residence at St. Olaf. She is incredible. She is so talented, and her playing is beautiful. So, yeah, Katie and I actually went to that concert at the same time. So.
And what do you hear when you hear her play?
The focus of her sound the most, because on the flute sometimes focusing and getting to the core of the sound can be very difficult because just the way the air goes, and she hits it every single time, no matter the dynamic, no matter the tempo. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's fun to be able to see that in a performer, and especially to see live music. I think I've talked about that on the air here, but it really does make a difference to be in the room with the instruments, with the audience, everybody there, and the performers that will be on stage. And what sort of ambitions do you have with the instrument?
I want to play flute in college, probably with a band rather than an orchestra, even though I do love the orchestra sound, but I'm more used to the band. So solo wise I am not sure, but I do play a lot at area churches, and I really enjoy that, and I think that's something I'd like to continue doing.
Well, I expect you'll be able to, and you'll get a lot of exposure from people coming to the concert and seeing you perform. And we should mention too that there's another concert coming up this year for the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra as well that we want to probably give a little plug to. That is, and I've forgotten the title of it.
Latin Inspirations.
I was going to say Latino, but it's not. It's Latin.
Yeah, we're going to be having a whole featured concert on music of the Latin cultures. And the big deal is the fact that we've invited Manny Laureano from the Minnesota Orchestra to come as our soloist, the solo trumpet of the Minnesota Orchestra. And we have a new composition for him, a new concerto that's been written by a Northfield resident who is Reynaldo Moya. And he's a theorist and a composer, and is the artist in residence at the Schubert Club up in the cities. And so we have a big deal going on there. We're going to have a local singer. We're going to have the folkloric dancers, and it should be a good time.
And that is May 18th and 19th, and first in Northfield, then in Faribault. So put that on your calendars now, but first put the one that's this weekend.
Yes.
And
that's right.
Please join everybody. I am so excited. Thank you, Celia, for being here live in the studio and for sharing your story and inspiring, I bet, lots of people to pick up an instrument and maybe have the courage to say, this isn't the one I want. I want that instrument like you did, going from clarinet to flute.
Hey, Celia, you should know, it sounds like you've got a pretty good radio voice.
That is true.
Oh, yeah.
She did a great job.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul, for being here as well. I always learn something from you, and that's what I love.
I try.
Paul Nemesto, the conductor of the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra. Folks, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. I hope that you'll find some time this week to add a bit of Art Zany to your life. The Northfield Arts Guild Purple Door Youth Theater, Les Miserables. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that correctly, so let's just call it Les Mis. The school edition opened last night, and it plays, I believe this weekend is sold out, but if you want to get tickets, you can check out northfieldartsguild.org. There's a couple of days that have openings. Also want to mention on Saturday, March 10th at the Hotspot, they're from 1 to 4, they're having the Painted Violin Project opening reception. It's a great, there's a music by artist-in-residence Bob Christie, and it's a display and auction organized by local instructor Laura Geisler as a benefit for the Northfield Public School Orchestra Program. And then she suggests you grab a bite, this is from Martha Larson, and then come back at 7:30 for the debut performance by marimba goddess Jenny Klukin's new ensemble, Work Wife. It's a talented women who are performing there and helping launch their musical journey. That's $10 at the door with marimba, tabla, cello, and violin. And she says you don't want to miss it, so I hope you'll join them.
Brings back memories. My daughter painted one of the first violins of that old series years ago.
Fun. It's a really beautiful thing, and it's a great display. So check out Hotspot, which is right here on Division at the, I forgot to write, 910. Union Street is the address, or just off a Division. So, folks, this is Art Zany. I hope you enjoy your imagination. And in the meantime, until next time, keep waking up your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.